Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 134 with Nathaniel Provencio. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Nathaniel Provencio, we explore a number of interesting topics like how he increased volunteer hours 1,150%, how he provided free school supplies for all 500 plus students, and what to do when you inherit a leadership team. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I would like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an incredible free resource for the better leaders that listen to this podcast. It's the Top 10 Fundraising Ideas for 2018, and that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you'll get the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 when you download it at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, better leaders. We have a superstar leader today, Nathaniel Provencio, joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools show. He has been the principal of Minneville Elementary in Prince William County, Virginia since 2010. Nathaniel began his teaching career in 2001 as a third grade teacher, and under his leadership, Minneville Elementary, a Title I school with a significant culturally and linguistically diverse student population, has been recognized as a national model professional learning community and a Virginia Distinguished Title I school. Minneville Elementary has been awarded as a Prince William County School of Excellence and was recently recognized as one of North Virginia's top performing schools. Now, there's going to be a longer bio available for everybody to check out. Click the link in the show notes so you can see that on the website. But Nathaniel's also been the Prince William County Principal of the Year and the Washington Post Principal of the Year. So we are really excited, Nathaniel, for joining us on the show. Thanks again.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And one of the questions I like to lead with always is just to give us the story. What inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Yeah, that's a great question. I grew up in a very unique environment. I grew up as one of very few Hispanic children in a very small southern town in Tennessee. So it was a town called Savannah, Tennessee. It's still called Tennessee. And so it was different growing up. It was different growing up. I know that the teachers that I was around, you know, did the best that they could, but I never quite had the opportunity to see myself in my educators. You know, my parents were working class, you know, folks, and, you know, they did the best that they could with me. So I really just didn't quite have that connection with the educators. Cause, you know, when you're a kid, your teachers are the ones that are around you more often, sometimes, than even your parents are. And so I struggled, you know, I struggled with some identity issues. I struggled finding myself. I struggled with figuring out what I wanted to do and who I was and, you know, with the peer groups. And I was basically, Danny, a terrible student. But man, I decided to figure things out when I was probably a sophomore in high school. And I had some choices that I had to make. You know, it was either go to the trailer factory, which was one of the highest employers in the area, or you know, join the military, or just figure out something that I was going to do. Teaching was so far off the radar.
Yeah, I'm sure. But
also in high school, you know, because I was a struggling student, I was also trying to find everything I could to get out of class. So ironically enough, I joined like this Future Teachers of America You know, I thought it was cool, you know, kind of get out of class, hang out with teachers, you know, do something, you know, just something. And, but I liked it, you know, I kind of gravitated to it. And you're kind of, all of a sudden you're asked to lead a little small group or read to kids. And it really resonated with me. And I thought maybe this is something that I can do. Maybe I could actually go to college. Maybe this is an opportunity for me. And it just kind of clicked with me that, let me find one thing that I want to do, stick with it, and let's see how far it can take me. And man, by the grace of God, I got into college. I was the first in my family to get to college.
Wow.
And I just stuck with it. So once I got accepted into university, I kind of just had this this drive that I just can't let my family down. My family's worked so hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
I struggled in school. I didn't really see myself in my teacher. So let me be the teacher that I never had, and let me pay it forward and say thanks to my family by not giving up. And yeah, man, 5 years later, I became a teacher. I was on the 5-year track. You know what I mean? So
was I.
That's right. That's right. So after that, I applied for jobs all over the country because I knew I had to get out of that town that I was in. And the Washington, D.C. area opened up their arms and took me. And I started out in 2001 as a third grade teacher. And so I was taught for third grade for 6 years. Absolutely loved it. Was able to align myself with some additional leadership responsibilities and positions and got my master's. And then basically soon after, I became an assistant principal for 3 years. And most recently, since 2010, I've been the principal of Minnieville Elementary School. So just, you know, unique path for my family. But, you know, it's one that I'm just very blessed to be a part of.
So was there something that was a catalyst to spark that deep reflection, whether it's the factory, military, or somehow figuring out what path? Like, what was it about sophomore year that had you thinking about that?
Well, I think reality was starting to come, you know, to play in. You know, when you start getting into high school, you see that the way my town was, it was just a town that just struggled with poverty. It struggled with poverty. It struggled with, I think, a lack of ideas, being so isolated in the South. And, you know, and I was like, man, it was also interesting because I had relatives and I had friends whose lives were just falling apart very quickly. Kids were dropping out. Kids were getting, you know, turning to drugs and turning to just things that just weren't good. And, I saw that around me, you know, even in my own family, and I had to escape. And, you know, college, when you're a child and living in that kind of area, it's an abstract concept. You know, it's not like you know, my parents didn't say, you know, when you go to college. They just wanted me to make C's and D's and stay out of trouble, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that college aspect was abstract. So what was real to me was drug abuse, seeing that around the kids that I was growing up, dropout rates, that trailer factory that we had to pass every day, you know, and say, man, that's tough stuff. It's a great living if you can do it, but I just knew there was something else for me. And if I stayed in that area, it wouldn't have been good. So I think that started to just become not just like a real thing for me my sophomore year, that I got to get my stuff act together, man. I got to start working hard at this. And man, when I went to college, man, it was a struggle. I didn't know how to study. I didn't even know what homework was. It took me like a year and a half just to learn how to be a student. And once I figured that out, college was like heaven to me. You know, there were no distractions. Everyone's on the same page, working towards the same goal. It was great. And then it just, and I think because I was removed from a lot of those distractions in my university, I was able to focus and stick with one goal. I knew us like once I, especially after what I learned in teaching with the Future Teachers of America club that I was in, I was like, this is what I need to do. This is what I'm going to stick with. And I stuck with it. It wasn't easy, but I got through it.
Yeah. I love you sharing that story, because the roots where you come from, I can hear how it's formed, right, and motivated your current career. Just seeing the video links you sent me, and you know, I want to start with this article, this free school supplies for all students. But I know you have a passion for students that are living in poverty, that are under-resourced, underprivileged, and you serve them so well. So, you know, one of the questions that I had after reading that article is just, how'd you make it happen? You know, I know that you leaned on your parent organization, but being able to offer free school supplies for all students, Can you talk more about, I guess, building a coalition to make that happen? And then why is that so important too?
Sure, sure. So, you know, something like free school supplies, you know, it may not seem like a big deal, you know, but it's a big deal to someone, right? And that someone is our family. So the kind of population that we have, I mean, it may not be unique to a lot of listeners, but at the end of the day, we have about 510 students that are literally coming from all over the world. I have Syrian refugees. I have refugees from the Middle East. I have families coming from war-torn Central American areas. I have a very large West African population. So these families are coming from all over the world, and they're just very blessed to have a taste of this American experience, right? But to me, I want to do everything I can to give them not just a taste of it. I want to immerse them in all the good things that we have, and I want to make sure that these kids who are coming from backgrounds and just experiences that you wouldn't wish on anybody just has an amazing experience each and every day. And so we want to, first and foremost, we want to make sure that the instruction is absolutely top notch. We want to make sure that access to resources are top notch. And that's a struggle in a Title I school because we don't have the type of PTA or PTO that's going to bring in all these different types of funds that's going to help enrich those experiences. We have to use exactly what we get. And how we utilize our budget is that the majority of it is always going to go to staff, because the more bodies that are in those classrooms and helping those kids, the better that they're going to be. Mm-hmm. So we focus our budget around staff and not stuff. However, some of that stuff does have an enriching experience. And so all of that comes around to this idea. In the summer, I was shopping for school supplies for my own kid. You know, once you have your own children, things get into perspective a little bit. So I'm at a department store buying school supplies for my first grader at the time, and just think, man, you know, I thought this stuff was going to be like $20. I'm walking out of here with like a $300 bill, you know, tab, and it's just like this is crazy. And so as I was kind of explaining, I think maybe a little bit too much out loud, my disappointment, this other adult came up to me and was saying how disappointed she was and how much she was spending. And I said, yeah, me too. What school do you go to? And she said, Minnieville Elementary. So this parent was mm-hmm. talking about the same experience I was having, and it was one of my parents at my elementary school. So after that, I shared that conversation with our PTO and our school leadership team, and we're like, guys, we got to do something a little bit different to help our families out. I mean, isn't there something in America called a free and appropriate public education? And these children that are struggling day to day, you know, they're basically almost going in debt just so that they can have a starting line, you know, get up to the starting line at the first day of school. So what would it take to give every single child in our school, all 500 plus students, access to all the school supplies they need for the whole year? Well, it turned out it wasn't that much. It turned out if we bought in bulk, if we reached out to our community partners, reached out to our PTO, we could get down a school supply list, those materials, for about $10 per student. That's everything that they would absolutely need, right? Mm, mm. So for maybe just a little over $5,000, our kids and our families, they walked into the school on the first day and had everything they needed. So that small gesture then turned into, wow, now we understand what our PTO and our school can do. How can I join the PTO? How can I be more involved in our school? So we were seeing this multiplier effect just by this simple gift of, yeah, you know, basically $10 per student. And we've reaped the benefits of that. And it's just really helped our parents understand what schools can do and what communities can do for their school. It's just something that's really, really important to me to make sure that these kids that are coming from all over the world have the best experience possible, because these kids are the ones that's going to run the world, man. They're going to take care of you and me when we're mm-hmm. old. They're going to engineer the next best bridge. They're going to build buildings that can do amazing things, and we might as well invest in them now. So even something like providing school supplies sets an equitable tone for every child in our school. So what might seem just like a little gesture, I think is a big deal.
Oh, it's a total big deal, and I think one of the things I like about that story is, you know, it's in line with one of my principal foundational beliefs, is in that generosity is going to attract people to me, right? And then I could serve them at an even higher level. And it doesn't matter that it was $10 per student. And in the grand scheme of things, someone like, you know, principal, nice paying job, you know, 10 bucks, what's 10 bucks?
Right.
But when that, for that kid, that meant everything, you know?
That's right.
And it meant that, you know, whoever that other student is across the classroom that I'm looking at, we are starting at the same level, you know? It's not, I don't have to be embarrassed. I don't have to hide the fact that I don't have a binder or school supplies or whatever, or just have to figure out, you know, lie, cheat, and steal, or, you know, just figure out something to be successful. You removed all the barriers, and that generosity attracted parents to you. And I'm curious, so you said more people were brought into your parent organization.
Yeah.
What happened next? What other kind of things have they been able to accomplish?
Yeah, so it's been such a quick, almost like reinvestment. So when parents realized that all this was happening with something simple like school supplies, they came right back to the office and said, now I realize what the PTO can do. Now I realize what the school can do. Let me sign up. How can I volunteer? How can I help out? How can we make sure that this happens the next year and the year after that? So we saw like something crazy, like a 60% increase in our PTO membership just after, you know, after we did that. And then, you know, so it's great. And all that just becomes a reinvestment in time and resources back into their students. And so, yeah, it's been great. And then schools have reached out to us, said, how did you afford to do this? I'd like to be able to do it. Let's help our PTO who right now might be a little out of line with the vision and mission of our school. Can you share that story with our PTO so that we can help out? So it just keeps on growing a little bit just by that simple gesture, which is, I think, is absolutely incredible.
Well, the other incredible aspect of it, too, is, you know, what you did is you removed barriers for your kids, but you removed a ceiling that parents had placed over their heads.
That's right.
And you know, basically obliterated their upper limit challenges. Mm. And you know what I mean, though? Because
absolutely.
A lot of times when you say we're going to provide school supplies for all students, yeah, that sounds pretty hard. Like, who are we to do that, right? Especially if you're dealing with it doesn't even matter, like community of affluence or poverty. A lot of people struggle with this idea of who am I to do X, right?
That's right. That's right.
But you said, you know, we can do it. And the thing about it is that doing a little bit of research, finding out how to do it in a smart way, you figured out it actually wasn't that expensive.
No.
$5,000 is a drop in the bucket in a school budget. And
that's right.
But it sounds, I mean, it's amazing. You provided school supplies for all your students.
That's right.
Absolutely fantastic. And then for the final point I want to make is that Nathaniel didn't keep this to himself, listeners. So when you figure something out that makes schools that much better, it's like it's an absolute imperative to share that with others. And so people reach out, please find a way to budget time to connect with other school leaders and share these best practices, because that's going to benefit other communities. You know,
you
got to give away your best stuff, so to speak.
Yeah. See, I agree with that, Danny. I was naive to the notion when I started my tenure at principalship that principals and schools talk to each other. I'm talking from neighborhood to neighborhood. We don't do that enough at all. Mm-hmm. I think we get so myopic and tunnel vision with what's going on in our school site that we forget that there's great things going on a block over. There's great things going on in the next city. And that's a real struggle that I have with public educational practices right now, is that even with the technology and the access to other schools, we do not take the time to network with each other. And I think that's a growth opportunity for the whole professional learning community process.
Yes.
Is that schools do a great job having that professional learning community with inside their school, but it's actually interbreeding ideas. And the idea of professional learning communities with amongst whole divisions and professional learning communities against state lines is, I don't want to say it's non-existent, but man, it could be a lot better. And that's something that just by sharing the ideas of something like school supplies, it's like, I'm amazed and actually a little embarrassed that we're even talking about it. Why hasn't that been brought up before? more? How come we haven't heard more about that? And why are these, we shouldn't have pockets of excellence in public education.
Right.
We should be sharing these ideas and stealing these ideas and refining these ideas. And it's just not happening. So I'm hoping that our little part in sharing this out strengthens the entire nation of public schools, man. But it's got to start somewhere. It's got to start somewhere.
You're absolutely right. That's the whole point of this podcast. It started 2 years ago for me. I wanted to become a better leader, and I didn't feel like I was getting enough leadership development personally. Mm. And so at some point, I can be a victim of my own narrative, or I can take control and be the author of it.
That's
right.
And
so I decided, you know what? Podcast doesn't cost that much to start up. Yes, I have no freaking idea what I'm doing.
That's right.
And nobody knows me, and nobody probably wants to be my guest, but I'm going to ask everybody in the world that I can, and I'm going to try to learn from people with more experience and that are smarter than me and all that. And that's what's happened. Now this is the number one downloaded school leadership podcast. It gets way over 10,000 downloads a month, which is in the top 93 to 95 percentile of all podcasts.
And it's amazing.
What you're just talking about, this is why we do it. We don't want pockets of excellence. We want to connect it and get it out there in a weekly show. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. I'm not sure if I'm going to do a 1 minute rant here, so please bear with me. But if you haven't heard that I have these masterminds for school leaders and listeners, if you're new to the show as well, we don't connect enough with each other. And Greg Sacciacoli, the author of The Enemies of Excellence, the number one enemy of a leader is isolation. And so every single week, right now, as we're recording, the mastermind is actually closed. Nobody can get in that wants to. There's a wait list. But maybe this is February. Maybe it'll be back open. We have a number of school leaders, Nathaniel, from the U.S., from Canada, from the Netherlands, Australia, and China. And each week, we are sharing wins of the week. We are sharing accountability.
That's awesome.
We're reading leadership books, and then we're helping each other solve our most significant problems.
That's great, man.
And you know, I just resonate. That's why I wanted to do that 1 minute rant, because, like you said, you know, we don't even reach out across necessarily to the school in the same district.
That's right.
We cut ourselves off, but we need connection. We need each other to be our best. And I experienced that problem. So that's why I created the Mastermind for School Leaders.
Well, that's great, man. That's awesome. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Let me give you one more tip, and the listeners as well. If you are looking for a way to just raise money for free, like easy, and you don't have to do any work, there's a company called School Spirit Vending, and they bring in vending machines. They will customize stickers for your school, logos, mascots, whatever you want, and they give a percentage back of the proceeds from the machine to your school. And schools are able to raise thousands and tens of thousands of dollars just from a simple vending machine that requires no electricity, so they're green, and they install the machines for you. So that's School Spirit Vending, and that's a great way to also find revenue that you can then use to buy school supplies or maybe even pay for positions.
That's great. That's great.
So, Nathaniel, thanks for letting me go on a little rant there and give that tip. But, you know, I love to learn, like I said, from others' experience and also their mistakes. So what would you consider your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
Oh, man, I think I make a mistake every day. You know, I think I'm averaging at least 1 to 2 mistakes every day.
Absolutely.
You know, when I came in, I came in at a unique situation where I got to come in the spring of 2010. So I was able to come in and sit back and watch and listen and see what was going on. But my biggest mistake was trying to do a little bit too much during that short tenure. You know, but it was still a good situation. A lot of times principals come in the summer, right, and able to kind of see what's going on. But I was able to come in the spring of 2010, where the year was finalizing, and see what was going on. But this is this is a mistake that I made. And I think if I could do it all over again, this is what I would do. You know, a lot of schools have their quote unquote leadership team, right? Mm-hmm. I see this a lot. And when I came in, I inherited a leadership team. And it's important to know, I think in retrospect, it's important to know and quickly understand the culture of a school that you're inheriting, if you're inheriting a school as opposed to starting a new school.
Yeah.
But when I came in, I used the previous administration's leadership team in order to try to talk about next steps and figure out what's going on. My issue with that, in hindsight, is that, and I don't know if this is a mistake or not. I mean, you know, there's research that says everything, but it wasn't my leadership team. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a new leadership team. It was a leadership team that was very much beholden to how things were
tradition.
Have been tradition. So they were really held strong to those cultural cows, right? And I felt like had I had done it all over again, and I think the mistake was I felt like I owed it to these folks to focus on tradition as opposed to focus on the future. And unfortunately for that school that we were in, the school I'm still a part with, is that best intentions were all around, but we weren't poised for excellence for the future. It was more of like a level of comfort for what was happening now. So I think had I had done it again, I would have immediately found, you know, worked harder to build better relationships with folks as opposed to just inheriting what was already there and then using those new relationships to be able to set a better tone for what was going on. And all of those folks were excellent. They were excellent teachers. They best intentions. But I will share that advice when I'm mentoring principals or share that tip. And that's kind of a tricky slope. That's a hard thing, mm-hmm. because principals, you know, they say don't change anything when you're there. You know, just live it. But in the situation that I was in, we couldn't afford to have another year of priority school status, which or focused school status, which is something you don't want to be a part of, you know, in Virginia at the time. And I think had I just more taken the time to build more relationships and found my own leadership team and leadership personnel in a more non-traditional way, I think even though we grew tremendously, I think we could have done some better things for kids. So, you know, mistakes happen every day, but I think in hindsight, if I were to go back, I would have taken the time to develop my own relationships as opposed to just inheriting relationships.
I couldn't agree more. In my experience as well, inheriting has never served me well as a school leader, right? And
right.
It's when you're able to build your own team, because it's all with mission, vision, and values, right? And
that's right.
You set that as a school leader for your organization. And those people, you know, it's nothing against them, but they don't necessarily know what that is. And it takes time for you to articulate and for it to sink in with your people to express it as a leader. And so a lot of times, maybe even unconsciously, they are quick to protect the tradition and almost roadblock you in a sense, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. But on the other end of it is, how do you then? And let me ask you this question. So if you were able to do what you wanted to do, develop the relationships and build your own leadership team, how do you still honor where the school was at, right? How do you still honor the culture that's been built and still keep an eye on the future and where you're going?
Yeah. So schools want to know that their leader understands the successes that they've had. And so even though I still try to do this too, and even going back to that scenario that I was talking to you about, maybe some things I also should have done better and I did, but was just really make a conscious effort to celebrate the successes, mm-hmm. And make sure that those successes were owned not by the former administrator and not by you as a new administrator, but they're the ones that worked hard to get that ownership. The students were the ones to worked hard to own those little success, even if they're little successes. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. People want to know that you're acknowledging the good work that they've done. And when I came in, it was to my particular school, it was a school that had been high performing historically, but had gone through some changes with demographics and changes with personnel and administration, and it was floundering. And so it was kind of hard to be able to say, hey, you know, I know we only had a 30% pass rate, but, you know, we're on the upward trend. You know, people know whether or not you're being genuine or not. But at the end of the day, we just actively sought out those little celebrations, kept it down to an individual student level. Little Johnny over here did great with this. You know, Susan did great with this guy. Mm-hmm. Excellent job with that. And then as we did that, those celebrating successes turned into, all right, now how can we multiply these successes? If this is what worked for one student, how can this work for all kinds of students? And what we found with that was how we did our language arts plan and how we did our language arts structures and scenarios. So I'll segue a little bit into this, looking at that celebration. Yeah. We were celebrating some of these small wins that we were doing in language arts, but we noticed that it was still this, this old school kind of center-based mindset, and where the one teacher would have a small group that she or he was working with in like a guided reading format. And then you would have 4 to 5 different centers throughout the room that the teacher had to basically, like a 3-ring circus, occupy and keep everyone on board while they were doing the guided reading group. And all these kids were then being pulled out for either LD services or ESOL services. And so we were finding ourselves trying to celebrate those literacy wins. But as we were trying to celebrate those literacy wins, we were realizing that the framework for delivering literacy instruction was not efficient. It was not good. And so one of the things I did in trying to find ways to celebrate was I spent an entire day with the lowest performing student in a grade level. Spent the entire day. And what I was doing is I wanted to see how much time that student was being actively engaged. So I had a stopwatch with me. I followed that student around from 8:30 in the morning till 3:30 in the afternoon. And Danny, that student was only being engaged for like something like 10 minutes through an entire day. The rest of the time was in transitions, ignoring the work, coming back from a pullout service and being lost, acting out. No one was engaging this child. So we were trying to go in to celebrate some wins, but we were finding, because we were in these classrooms a lot more, that there was a lot of work to be done. And we needed to change some things fast and quick, or we were never going to grow with the type of school that we wanted to be in. And so that kind of structure, trying to find that, we had to rearrange some things very, very quick. So we decided to get with everyone, share the good things that we were seeing, but also share some of the things that we had to change immediately. And that was how we were doing our language art structure. So instead of a pullout structure, we decided to do a school asset map of all the literacy support that we had in our school, whether that's ESOL teachers, paraprofessionals, reading specialists. And we just devised a plan to bring everyone into the classroom during literacy instruction in order for that classroom teacher to not have to have one guided reading group going on at a time and then manning these centers, that they are actually, in bringing in support in the classroom, we could have 4 to 5 individualized guided reading groups or literacy-based groups going on at the same time. And then in doing that, increase the communication and collaboration that we had in the school, increase the type of supports that we were having, and increase, most importantly, Danny, is the engagement. And so that's become we call it our press-in structure, mm-hmm. and that's become kind of our modus operandi with how Minnieville does literacy instruction. But that all came out from trying to initially find little ways to celebrate in the school, right? And then it turned up to be, you know, we uncovered this Pandora's box of instructional issues that we were having in our school. And now that structure that we have, which is basically a PLC-based structure, mm-hmm. that increases communication and collaboration for language arts, has become one of the most sought-after instructional models that we have in our division. So that question resonated with me, trying to find those celebration areas, but also uncovering areas that needed to evolve quickly.
School leadership is hard work. Why should funding student-centered programs be difficult too? If you are stressed about your budget and where you'll find some extra cash to run a great program for kids, I have a solution for you. Introducing the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018. In this guide, you will find the best school fundraising ideas available in 2018. My favorite company described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending brings hassle-free fundraising to schools through custom sticker vending machines installed in your school. The best part, you do absolutely no work. The School Spirit Vending team installs, maintains, and shares the revenue collected with the school. You can learn more about School Spirit Vending and the other magnificent companies mentioned in the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Go there now, download the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com.
Let's stick with celebration. I love asking podcast guests, what are you particularly proud of your school for accomplishing or attempting recently?
Yeah, so the family engagement aspect has grown significantly with us. You know, we have our academic results for a Title I school have been outstanding, but even more outstanding, that is how we have chose to do our family engagement. And so we have a family engagement team of teachers and parents and even sometimes business partners that actively collaborate to monitor how many hours volunteers come into our school and work with our kids and students. And so in 2011, we wanted to figure out how many hours we had with parent engagement and volunteers. And so for an entire school year, it was something like 400 documented hours of volunteerism in our school. Mm-hmm. That is not a lot at all. That is mm-hmm. not a lot at all. So we had this team that we came together with. We started to figure out what barriers existed in our school that were actually keeping our parents from coming in, keeping business partners from coming in, keeping dads from coming in. And it was everything from like infant-friendly areas to language barriers to just the way the front office was laid out for people. And so we had this huge concerted effort to be able to rechange and rebrand the idea of parent involvement in our schools. And so within the first year, we grew from 400 parent volunteer hours to 1,000 hours. The next year, 2,000 hours. And now we're up to close to 5,000 hours of true, meaningful parent volunteer support in inside our schools. Now, 5,000 hours probably doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're coming from 400 hours, it's a tremendous amount for a Title I school. And some of the things that we're dealing with are families whose idea of public school is very different from the typical American view of schools. So we're trying to make sure that families from El Salvador and families from Western Africa and families from all over the world understand that this is a safe place to come. It's a place that we need your cooperation and collaboration in so that your child can be successful. So in doing that, we're just really, really proud of those efforts to have more involvement in our schools. And even something like the free school supplies has been an outgrowth of these kinds of efforts. And then our business partnerships, we really try to reach out for business partners that aren't necessarily willing to write us a check, because that's an easy thing to do. So when I go into businesses, I say, yeah, I mean, well, it's great to financially support our school, but that's easy. Anyone can write a check. I want your employees to come into our school and mentor my kids, mentor our students. I want you to have recess with our kids. I want you to eat lunch. I want professionals that look like our kids coming in and sharing their stories. And it's amazing, Danny, how often they'll say, no, we can't do that, but can we write you a $500 check?
Yeah.
I want your time. And so the kind of businesses that we look out to try to support, you know, I have some of my colleagues are like, yeah, you're crazy, man. You're not taking all this money. I was like, it's not about money. It's about time. It's about time and relationships. And so that's something that's big for us, is that we actively seek out community partners that are going to invest emotionally in our kids and spend time with our kids. And all of these efforts have allowed our school to grow and be a successful school. So even if you were to take out some of the successful instructional and academic, you know, measures that we have, those quantitative measures, mm-hmm. if you look at our qualitative measures, I'm just as much proud of as that as anything else. But it takes a team and it takes an effort. And each one of our teachers, they have a goal, a parent volunteer goal or an engagement goal, just like they have a reading goal or a math goal. It's very interesting. And when schools spend the time to actively seek out those kinds of efforts, that's where they'll grow. It's just like a SMART goal, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And listen, 400 to 5,000 hours is quite a huge increase. And I, while you were sharing that wonderful story, I opened up the percentage increase calculator online. Listen, yeah. Nathaniel, that's a 1,150% increase in volunteer hours.
That's awesome, man. That's great.
And it started, too, with a question, right? How can we be more welcoming? And then as a school leader, you got to have the courage to face what the answers might be. And I love how you segmented it. You broke it down for how can we be more welcoming for dads? And how can we more welcoming for business owners? And then finally, the other thing I want to unpack for the listeners, it is easy. And did you hear what Nathaniel did with businesses? Anybody could write a check. And to tell you the truth, businesses want you to ask them to write a check because they get a tax break for that, you know?
That's right.
It's not very hard to do, and it's super beneficial for them. But what the greatest resource we all have that's a very finite amount is time. And so when you ask people, you know, we want you to write the check and we want you to, you know, put in some blood, sweat, and tears to mentor our kids, to work with them, to help them see, like you said, you grew up in this town in Tennessee. You didn't have a vision for college. Well, what if there was a businessman or woman that said, hey, Nathaniel, this is what you could do with your life. How would that have changed you at an earlier age? You know,
things
worked out. But I love that you have the courage to challenge the business leader to not just give money, but to really go for it as well.
That's right. That's right.
All right. So I'm curious, in wrapping up here, last few questions. What's one book every principal should read right now and why?
Wow. Yeah, you know, I was my supervisor gave me this book or gave me this idea for a book by the Gallup poll. And I'm sure your listeners have heard this, but it's one that always resonates with me. It's called First Break All the Rules. I don't know, Danny, if you've ever heard of that one.
Haven't heard that one yet. Yeah.
Yeah. It's called First Break All the Rules. I can't remember the author, but it was put out by the researchers from the Gallup poll. You know, those guys that do all the surveys and all the research and everything. But it focuses specifically on leadership, management, and how to look at that role in just a different light. Hence the name First Break All the Rules. But I would strongly encourage leaders, and it's not based on education. It's based on just on a business framework. It just kind of changed my perception and changed my way of looking at it. I don't agree with everything that's in the book, but it was something that resonated with me. So it's by the Gallup poll, First Break All the Rules. I would strongly and highly encourage everyone who's in leadership to read that. And I love reading books that are not, because there's so many leadership books out there, right? But to read books that are non-educational, I think that gives us a different focus and a different perspective because we're bombarded with so many educational-based books. Mm-hmm. But to look at things through a business lens and look through a management lens, I think gives us different perspectives. So we're not so, you know, myopic when it comes to leadership. So, First Break All the Rules by the Gallup poll, man, is one that I would highly recommend.
Yeah, and listeners, you know that we always link those up for you in the show notes. So that's First Break All the Rules by Jim Harder.
There you go.
I've already linked it up for you in the show notes. And I just want to do a plus one or a thumbs up like for Nathaniel's comment. What we read in the Mastermind are all books outside of the industry because we do get caught in a bubble. And I want the leaders that join to be pushed by outside industries and how they can grow in their leadership. Nathaniel, what do you do for fun?
Oh man, I'm a drummer. So when I'm not trying to be super dad and super husband, I got two wonderful kids, a little girl, a little boy. But when the free time that I have, I'm a drummer in a 90s 2000 cover band. So that's pretty fun.
Okay, what's your favorite song to play?
You know, I think my favorite song to play, the one that gets a big crowd response is the Darkness, I Believe in a Thing Called Love. It's quite a fun song to play.
Yeah. That's great. I love that question because I never know, you know, what'll come out.
Yeah, I know what's going to come out. Yeah, man. So that I've been playing the drums for a long time and kind of did that as an outlet when I was in school and everything. And, you know, it's hard to get the time to do that. But when I've got a couple weekends off or whatever, and DC is a great place for that. So, yeah, it's It's a lot of fun. So yeah, I play the drums in a 90s cover band. There you go.
Awesome. Hey, I think we'll end with this question. I would love to know, what message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for one day?
Oh, man. I think it would be believe in your kids, you know? Believe in your kids. Man, you know, it's. I don't think we give these kiddos enough credit, you know? Sometimes our kids are reduced to numbers, you know, they're reduced to, you know, statistics and reduced to things. And but, you know, kids can do a heck of a lot more than we give them credit for. And they can do a lot more than the parameters that public schools currently have. You know, it's kind of restricting a little bit. And we just limit sometimes, you know, the great things that they can do. So, yeah, so just for one day, just believe in kids, just to see what would happen with that. You know, and if communities believe in their kids, they'll invest more. If neighborhoods believe in their kids and believe in their public school, it'll raise everybody up. Sometimes teachers need to be reminded to believe in kids. You know, we get kind of so dragged down in the ins and outs of the workday that we forget that we've been given this miracle to work with children. And it's not a job, you know, it's a calling, it's a mission. And my best teachers are the ones that really believe in kids. And it sounds, you know, it can sound a little sappy sometimes and sound like more like, you know, just something that we say, you know, but seriously, do you believe in these kids? Do you believe that this child that just immigrated here from the Middle East is going to be the next engineer?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you believe that your Title I students have just as many gifted students identified than a affluent school in the next county over? Do you believe that these students can actually contribute to the community? Can you believe in these things? Because they can. They're only limited by the adults around them, right? So there's your marquee, Danny. Believe in kids, man.
Believe in kids. I love it. Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Nathaniel. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Nathaniel in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up and you'll get the highlights of today's episode. Links to all the resources, which include a number of videos Nathaniel shared with me, Principal of the Year, Soaring to Excellence, Colorin, Colorado, the article, First Break All the Rules, and then that book, missing it right now, but that's okay. That's linked up. First Break All the Rules. What am I saying? That one's going to be there linked up for you as well. So, and Nathaniel's Twitter account. Nathaniel, thank you so much for your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
My pleasure, man. You got it.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show. And feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across? Links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well. If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.